This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
And the pitch is hammered in the air to deep left field. Way, 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 way back. Off the scoreboard and left. A long home run for Machado. It's a three-run homer, and the lead is reinflated. Padres up 15-11.
Turns out the disengagement didn't matter. This ball is pummeled to left field.
That's our guy, Tony Gwynn Jr., as the Padres. Yes, indeed. How about that, everybody? They knock off the Dodgers 15-11.
What?
Today. That was indeed the final score in South Korea. 15-11 Padres. They got a 5-run first. They got a 4-run third. And they finished it up with Manny's 3-run shot there in the ninth. And I don't know how many times I read yesterday on Twitter that Jay Cronenworth absolutely positively must be removed from this team.
I didn't read that.
I did. I read it many times yesterday. I also read that there's no way in hell he should be batting third in this lineup.
They may have a point there.
Well, they don't have a point after today. He was 4-for-4 with 4 RBIs. I'd say he did all right. He had a 2-run triple in the first inning that started the onslaught, and the Padres never trailed in holding off the Blue Crew 15-11. They'll have to recalibrate the Dodgers. 162-win season. It is not going to happen, despite the best efforts of Mookie Betts, who drove in six for Los Angeles
Will
today.
Will Smith, I think, had four. He had four hits
and drove in a couple. But, you know, look at the Padres. I mean, not only Jake 4-for-4, but Campusano had three hits, two RBIs. Jackson Merrill stung the ball again, had two hits, his first two career hits today.
Tyler Wade
chipped in with two. Do you want to just do the show?
No, I'm just having fun announcing.
You're just having a fun time?
Yeah, it's fun.
Fernando and Bogarts also had two. I'll tell you who looks good at the plate. They all looked good today, but Bogarts is relaxed up there, taking balls back up the middle, nice easy swings, driving in runs. And look, the Padres, how about this, Scraby? And you may have to go back through every box score from last season. In fact, I may assign you that.
Oh, great.
See if there was a game last year where they had 10 hits with runners in scoring position.
I know how
in
I can do
one
this.
Game.
I'm on it.
You don't have to do that. They barely had 10 hits with runners in scoring position all last
year.
Season. They had 10 hits with runners in scoring position today. Cronenworth was 3-for-3 with runners in scoring position. Campusano had two hits with RISP for the season. The Padres, your Padres, are now 12-for-29 hitting with runners in scoring position. That works out off the top of my head to a .444 batting average with runners in scoring position. That is a early sign that maybe things will be a little bit different in 2024. Feel much better to get that win. There's no question.
Totally
you did not want to limp home 0-2. And you don't. You come home 1-1. Now you get a few days to rest up, play a couple of exhibition games Monday and Tuesday against the Mariners, and then time to welcome Bob Melvin and company with the Giants next Thursday. But this was all, you know, very, very good today for the Padres. I know Musgrove didn't pitch great. Michael King got the win. But, they did a little damage against him. But overall, I mean, the Dodgers keep coming. I mean, they keep coming. I mean, you look at the Dodgers, they scored in six of the nine innings today. So they, you know, they were threatening, it seemed like, all game long. But, you know, the Padres kept them at arm's length. And, it's a nice victory. Feel much better with that victory. And Padres are 1-1 coming home. We'll hear from Mike Shildt on the program, some of his postgame comments, and others throughout the day today. Two things I haven't mentioned yet about the game today. And this is a guess, but it's a very educated guess.
Okay.
Here are the two things that Scraby enjoyed most about today's Padre victory.
Was not aware of this?
Well, yes. I guarantee this is one of them. The first one, I don't even have to question. I know you were ecstatic about it. The second one, you may not be as ecstatic. But the first one that I know for a fact you loved today was that your guy, Yoshi Yamamoto, was pounded by the Padres.
Absolutely.
For four hits, one walk, five runs, hit batter in the first inning. It was only by the kindness and grace of Dave Roberts that Yamamoto even made it through the first inning. Dave Roberts wanted to take him out. He thought better of it. He thought, you know what? I don't want to break this guy's confidence in his first game. But you can't stand the fact, and a lot of people are with you, honestly. You're not alone. But you can't stand the fact that Yamamoto got $300 million before he ever threw a pitch in Major League Baseball.
$325
even. Today, he looked like he was worth about $3.25, let alone $325 million. I'm sure he's going to pitch better, nerves, et cetera. You know, first game, trying to live up to a big contract. But it was fun to see. It was really nice to see the Dodgers' money feel a little like it was wasted, at least for today.
Yes, and I also did the calculations last night, Chris.
What'd you come up with?
I tweeted this out earlier. According to SpotTrack, Yamamoto's cash this year is $55 million. Today, that was $1,279,069.77 per pitch.
Per pitch. Yeah.
So.
And only 20.
You're right. He's going to play better.
Oh, he'll be fine. He'll be fine. I'm sure he'll have a nice season. But it was nice at least for one time.
It was validating.
It was a little validating. He threw 43 pitches. Only 23 were strikes. He was not good at all. And the Padres just shoved him aside en route to this victory. Here's the other thing that I think you like, Scrabe.
Let me hear it.
And this isn't as, I'm not as sure about this, but I think you liked it. Robert Suarez, a four-out save.
Also a tweet of mine today.
Also a tweet of yours today.
You're right, Chris.
You're right.
Spot on, because I said,
I knew you would like that.
See a four-out save from a Padres closer?
See that?
See
that, Josh Hader? It is possible. And I don't think Robert Suarez's arm is ruined for the rest of the season. You know what I mean? He came in, he gave up the RBI single or two-run single to Betts. But then, look, he had to get through Otani, Freeman, Will Smith, Muncy. You know, got them all.
He did.
And nailed it down. So nice work by Robert Suarez as well. Yeah, so those are the two things I know you were especially excited about today as the Padres 17 hits, 15 runs. I tweeted this out. I don't know if you caught it, but the last two times now that Padres have scored that many runs, they've had to leave the country to do it. They had 16 runs in a game last year in Mexico City. They had 15, obviously, today. Those are numbers they have not reached on American soil for the last 2 years plus. But they did it. It's a fun fact. It's a fun fact. And at least for one day, right, it quiets everybody that, you know, was screaming after yesterday that this team can't hit and we've got to add Brandon Belt and we've got to add Tommy Pham and we've got to get Cronenworth out of the three hole. You know, look, it was one game, and today's just one game. But the bottom line is, as we learned, you have to take a little time before you come to all of these conclusions.
I know. But can you imagine if they went 0-2, we would have ahead of us?
Right. It would be double what we saw after the first game yesterday, which was not fun at all.
No.
So nicely done by the Padres today. I had one other quick note to throw in there, because I know that a lot of people think that by trading Juan Soto away, the Padres would never score a run. You know how many times the Padres scored 15-plus when Juan Soto was here?
Maybe once?
Once. In that game at Mexico City.
There you go.
That's the only time they ever scored 15 runs when they had Juan Soto on the team. They got 15 without him today. Are they going to miss him? Sure.
Absolutely.
But can they score runs? Evidently. Evidently, they can. They proved it today.
The 2-3-4-5 hitters also had some good
a little
success.
Bit better. Yes, 2-3-4-5 hitters yesterday were 0-for-14. Today they were 7-for-16 with 8 RBIs.
And poor Ha-Sung Kim did not get a hit.
Ha-Sung didn't get in there, but he did drive in a run with a sacrifice fly.
Good point. And good point, Chris.
And he stole his first base of the season. But I think this is incredible, this runners in scoring position thing. I mean, again, I'm not going to have you look at every box score. There is no way they had a game last year with 10 hits with runners in scoring position. There's no way that happened. And they had 10 hits. They had 24 at-bats with runners in scoring position. I mean, this was not a fluky 15. They came out swinging. And they kept on swinging.
Because I know that you taped the game and then you watched it a little bit late.
I did, yeah. I watched it when I woke up this morning.
So when I woke up, I immediately went and checked the score because I wanted to see. And
you like to see the score before you watch the replay.
Yeah, then I'll go back and I'll look at
somebody
what happened.
Somebody please, see, you don't understand my viewing habits. I don't understand why somebody who DVR'd a game wants to know the final score before they sit down to watch it. That makes less sense than anything that I do.
You may have a point there. You may have a point there. But I looked at my app and it said 15-11. I thought it was a typo because that just doesn't happen. And then I looked at runners in scoring position and I saw 10-for-24. I'm like, that doesn't happen.
No, that doesn't happen. So anyway, Padres got it done today. We can all feel a little bit better about things. John Nolan is the Fort Wayne Tin Caps play-by-play guy. He is, that's the double-A team of the Padres. And he's awfully well-versed in these young guys. And, you know, we've heard about them. We've watched them a little bit. We're a little familiar with them. Let's get more familiar with the likes of Jackson Merrill and Jacob Marcy and, you know, all of these guys that are vying to become Padres. We will have him on the program in the first hour of the show. Also, I haven't torn it up yet.
Can I do this real quick for you? Chris has held off from talking about his favorite day of the year for 12 minutes. So go ahead, Chris.
That was pretty impressive that I didn't even get to the NCAA tournament.
I almost asked you before the show, can we just start Padres?
And we did.
We did.
Of course we started Padres today.
That
was the big story.
It's
the big story of the day. But the NCAA tournament is underway. There are 5 games that have been completed. North Carolina blew out Wagner. That was to be expected,
yes.
Right? There was no surprise there. Let's see what else happened early morning. Michigan State was impressive. I don't know that everybody picked that, but I think most people thought that they would beat Mississippi State. And Tom Izzo is just a good coach. What are you going to say? The guy's a good coach, and he has his team playing, you know, really, really well right now, and they look good. They'll play North Carolina next in the second round. Also, this morning, we saw who else? I'm looking, scanning my bracket to find the other games that were played.
Did you already say Duquesne? Sorry, I was reading.
No, I'm going to saving that one.
Okay.
Creighton beat Akron. That was a comfortable win for Creighton.
Arizona
did not get the hook.
Nope.
Arizona is favored by 20.5. They beat Long Beach State by 20, so they missed the hook. And we're going to talk. I know that you guys, this is maybe not everybody's favorite subject, but with the Ohtani thing going on right now and with what's happening now in the NBA.
Yeah.
I don't know if you heard about that out there, but Cleveland Cavaliers head coach said he was bullied by gamblers.
Yeah.
This whole thing with betting on sports is starting to get away from people a little bit. We're going to talk about it because I couldn't help but think about it as I was watching the end of that Arizona game.
Yeah.
It's a 20-point game. The spread's 20.5. Everybody's concerned about whether they'll make a basket or not. It's the wrong thing to be concerned with, right? We should be enjoying the game, but we're not because all we do is gamble on it. One last final score from earlier today. My new favorite team in college basketball, after the Aztecs, of course, the Dukes of Duquesne.
Duquesne? Is it Duquesne or Duquesne?
No, it's Duquesne.
Okay, because
but since you called them Duquesne yesterday,
I know.
I'm referring to that. But anybody that beats BYU gets my love and immediate support. And they knocked off BYU today, 71-67. Nice job by Duquesne. They will move on in the tournament. And Duquesne gets to the second round. That was their first NCAA tournament game in like 47 years.
Really?
Yeah, they hadn't even been to the tournament since 1977.
That's a great story.
So they post a victory today. Now, there's three games in progress. Want to get you up to date before we take our first break. Illinois was embroiled in a real difficult game with Morehead State until about 5 minutes ago. And now Illinois has just gone on an explosion. And with 8 minutes to go, the Illini have pulled away to a 70-54 lead. So it's looking good for Illinois. Also in progress right now, Oregon at halftime leads at South Carolina 34-29. First half, Dayton 20, Nevada 16. Don't go anywhere. Keep your brackets handy. We will keep you up to date with all of the games as they go on throughout the day. We'll get you ready for the Aztec game tomorrow morning against UAB. We'll talk plenty of more Padres on the program in the wake of their 15-11 victory over the Dodgers. Chris Ello here, Matt Scraby there, Tony Gwynn Jr. Yeah, they talk about the flight to Korea.
Ugh.
You got to make one back, too.
No one cares about the flight back.
Nobody ever talks about the flight back. You got to do that, too.
Yes, you do.
13 and a half more hours. Tony is airborne. We will carry you through until 6 o'clock. Stick around. Good sports day. Good day to be around on San Diego's number one sports talk station, 97.3 The Fan.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
All right, welcome back to Gwynn and Chris today. This is a great day. You know, my guy, Spiro Dedus, who's been on this show many times, was broadcasting the game last night. Boise State looked terrible, by the way.
They did.
Absolutely awful performance. Here's one thing I don't like, and I know you probably don't like this either, Scrape. But Boise State played two fantastic games this year against the Aztecs and beat them both times. Tyson Degenhart was amazing. Max Rice was hitting 40-foot jumpers. Omar Stanley was on fire in both games. All three of those guys were terrible last night. So you watch the game and you're like, where were these guys when they played the Aztecs?
Yeah, it's very annoying.
I mean, Max Rice, I think, scored 2 points last night. Degenhart had about six. It was a really bad performance
by
Boise
State.
They
did not show up.
They didn't. And Colorado's, you know, good team, but that was nowhere near what I've come to expect from Boise State. So the Mountain West is 1-1 right now. But here's what Spiro Dedus said last night. They were doing a promo for the games today that were on, you know, CBS starting at 9 in the morning. Said, tomorrow's like Christmas morning. And I said, that's right, Spiro. You tell him.
Spiro.
Today is like Christmas Day.
Come on,
Spiro. I love it. If you're a sports fan, today is like Christmas Day. The NCAA, March Madness.
What does that make tomorrow then? Because it's like the same thing.
We get another one.
Okay.
But it's not quite the same tomorrow. I mean, even though the Aztecs are playing tomorrow, it feels like the first day is special. The second day, you just kind of settle in. You know, and it's like, okay, another round of games.
Yeah, yeah.
But the first day, you're opening the presents. And the best gift of all was handed out by Duquesne. Ha ha, BYU. Ha ha ha, BYU. You know what? I hope somebody from Provo just happens to be tuned in right now. Ha ha, BYU, please record what I'm saying and play it for all of your listeners.
Your feud with BYU is as strange as my feud with iPhone.
It'll never end. I mean, I went on a BYU thing 7 years ago, maybe 8 years ago.
I've heard.
Right. And they recorded what I said. They only played parts of what I said.
Yes, they did.
To make it sound worse than it was.
Yes, they did.
And
they did.
And they played it throughout Provo radio for like a week straight. And what did I get? 1,000 emails?
I don't know.
It was unbelievable. I mean, it was just incredible. They wrote a story about me in the newspaper. They had my picture in there. And if you ever wanted to check that out, like if you're saying, what are you talking about, Chris? Because I'm not going to revisit everything I said about them.
No, that's in the past.
It's in the past. Although much of it is still true today, okay. I will say that. I'm not going to say what I said, but much of it is still true today. But if you want to know what I said about BYU, just Google LO Rant BYU, and it will pop up.
It will.
Still today.
So, whenever I Google Chris LO, it pops up.
It does. Still, yeah, right. So anyway, haha, BYU, we'll see you later. I'm going to keep you up to date with the scores. Nevada has gone ahead of Dayton now, 27-25, late first half. Oregon, just starting the second half, leads South Carolina 40-34. Those are the two games that are in progress. Illinois is still in progress, but they're now up 23 and really running away from Morehead State after what was a very close game for a long time. So if you got your brackets, keep them handy. I'll keep you updated on the scores. Just keep on listening. Enjoy the program. One thing about the Padre game that I enjoyed, I predicted the two things that you had enjoyed. Here's something I enjoyed about the game that we haven't talked about yet. Max Muncy sucks. I love that. And let me tell you something. Everybody who's a Padre fan feels the same way.
Absolutely.
There's something about Max Muncy that rubs all of us the wrong way. I'm not exactly sure what it is, but I know it's there. If Padre fans had to pick their least favorite Dodger, least favorite current Dodger, I'm pretty sure it would be Max Muncy. The other guy that would be giving him a run for his money is Dave Roberts, the manager. People in San Diego don't like Dave Roberts. I think they feel he's a little arrogant. He's a little above everybody. But since I know Dave Roberts and I really like Dave Roberts, I don't share that feeling about Dave Roberts. But Max Muncy, I share the feeling. He annoys me. I root against this guy openly. And he looked so bad at third base today that I honestly don't know how the Dodgers can keep playing him. I mean, he had two errors and he boxed at least two other plays that cost the Dodgers runs.
Absolutely.
And both of those went for hits.
Mm-hmm.
But there was a ground ball that Campusano hit in the very first inning. Manny would have backhanded it and thrown Campusano out by 20 feet.
Yep.
Muncy kicked it down the line for a double.
He did.
And they gave him a double.
I love how he just stands there and watches, too.
He doesn't look like he cares.
He's not. He's playing a position that he's not set up for success.
He is awful at third base. And, you know, Betts and Lux, although they're not, you know, picking up errors yet, those two guys aren't great at second and short either. And anybody who thinks the Dodgers are going to run away to 110 victories because of all the money they spent, they're not going to run away to 110 victories playing that kind of defense.
No.
And if that's not, we had Alden Gonzalez on last week who covers the Dodgers. And I asked him, I said, how are they going to do with this defense? And he said, they're not going to do well. It's a big concern. It has to be a concern. The look on Dave Roberts' face every time the ball is hit to Max Muncy will tell you all you need to know.
It's a look of pain.
Pain and agony and OMG, what is he going to do now?
Ed McKee, 23, on the chat has a good one. They spent over $1 billion in free agency. They don't have a third baseman.
They spent $1 billion on free agency. They didn't buy any gloves.
They didn't do anything in the infield, it seems
their infield
except
is,
for Freddie Freeman's the only one.
Well, Freddie Freeman's fantastic,
yeah.
But he can only save so many throwing errors.
Exactly.
Max Muncy looked absolutely pathetic. And it's not just the two errors. I'm talking about the plays he didn't make that led directly to runs.
Absolutely.
I mean, and here's another thing. If you're ever playing the Dodgers and you're, you know, struggling to get offense going, drop a bunt down to third base. See if he can play it.
I mean, he's not going to be quick enough to get down the line. If he's not
if he does,
it.
He's probably going to throw it away. Down to the right field corner. Max Muncy's not a major league third baseman. He is a major league designated hitter. The problem is, the Dodgers already have a guy who does that pretty well, named Shohei Ohtani. You might have heard of him.
I almost asked like a dummy, who was their DH last night?
But oh,
of course,
you,
it's Shohei.
You got it. Okay,
it's Shohei.
Yeah, but Max,
I thought he was suspended already, Chris.
Yeah, I know. Well, we'll get into all of that. He's got some issues right now.
He does.
A lot of people around Ohtani are trying to downplay this, but I don't think you can keep downplaying it when $4.5 million exits your bank account and goes directly to a bookie.
Yeah, That's bad.
So we'll have to get into that as we go along.
Chris, you're getting lots of love on the chat today. Everybody's saying, keep it going, Chris.
Well,
making it rain.
I appreciate it, but, you know, I think everybody's just in a better mood because the Padres won today. But I have a good read of our fan base.
Yeah.
And I know that our fan base does not like Max Muncy, so I know they were just as happy as I was to see him kicking the ball all over Korea.
Absolutely. All over Korea. Dan says, Ohtani bet on the Padres today, so Muncy booted the ball.
Okay. All right. Well, we will get into all of that. We've got to take a quick time out here. Always, at every break, coming in or out, one or the other, we will keep you up to date on the NCAA scoreboard. So have your brackets handy. We'll keep you up on those games. But for now, we take a quick timeout. When we come back, looking forward to having John Nolan. He's the play-by-play guy, the Fort Wayne Tin Caps. I want to know a little more insight into the likes of Jackson Merrill and Jacob Mar and all of these young guys. And he knows them all. So we'll catch up with him. He's the Sammy Lev. Now that Sammy's up with us.
Yeah.
Right? So
yeah,
we'll John's catch great. Up. Yeah, we'll catch up with John next. Stick around for that, Padre fans, Gwynn and Chris.
Cronenworth coming. That's lined sharply down the right field side. A fair ball going to go all the way to the corner and going to give the Padres a lead. Bogarts has scored. Tatis is on his way. He will score. And Cronenworth, who tripled seven times last year, is into third base with a two-run three-bagger.
Take that, all you Jake haters. Jake Cronenworth, 4-for-4, 4 RBIs today, leading the Padres to their highest scoring output ever in a game against the Dodgers. That's pretty crazy.
That is.
Been playing the Dodgers since 1969, Scraby. 55 years of baseball. And today, the first time they ever scored 15 against the men in blue. They gave up 11, but Robert Suarez, doing the un-Josh Hader-like thing of recording a four-out save, nailed it down. Padres win 15-11. Michael King got the win in relief of Joe Musgrove. Joe did not have a great day, but he had a lot of support. Padres got 5 in the first, 4 in the third, had a 9-2 lead. But the game was not iced until Manny Machado, using the words of my friend Tony Gwynn Jr., pummeled a 3-run homer in the top of the ninth inning to account for the final margin. Yoshi Yamamoto's Major League debut did not go well. Did not go well.
So, I don't know. I shouldn't hate the guys. I don't hate the guy.
You don't hate him. You hate that he signed, you know, he was able to sign that big of a contract without ever playing a game. That's what you hate.
Or throwing a pitch.
A pitch, yeah. John Nolan, Fort Wayne, Tin Cat, Kip Caps, those guys, our play-by-play voice joining us shortly. Two games in the NCAA tournament are in progress. Oregon, early second half, running away right now from South Carolina, 57-40. The Quacks lead by 17.
The Quacks? Are they like doctors or something?
No, it's another term for ducks. It's a term of endearment.
Okay.
The Quacks lead 57-40. Also, Mountain West, Nevada Wolfpack closed the first half on a 16-0 run. The Nevada was down by 7, but now at halftime, Nevada leads Dayton by 9, 34-25. Those are the two games that are in progress right now. How's your bracket? We'll keep you up to date as these games roll along. John Nolan, about set to join us.
Okay, yeah.
Is he ready? Scraby is negotiating with him right now.
I'm not negotiating. I was just telling him. I was putting him on hold. He's ready to go.
Hello, John Nolan. How are you, and how are things in Fort Wayne, Indiana these days?
Hey, Chris. Hey, Matt. Thanks a lot for the chance to connect with you. And if only I had someone to negotiate on my behalf, maybe I'd be joining you guys in the sun rather than chilly weather. We're in the 30s here in Indiana, but, ready or not, we'll be playing ball soon.
Yeah. Now, I have spent some time in Fort Wayne, Indiana. I broadcast Gulls hockey here in San Diego many years ago. And there was a year where the Gulls played the Fort Wayne Comets for the IHL championship. Fort Wayne won it in 4 straight. So the Comets celebrated at our expense, but I did spend a week there, and it was it was nice. I had a good time.
Yeah, I know the immortal Dave Marcus has shared that trip with me in the past. And yeah, for listeners right now, you know, in case you need some useless information, here in the United States, you have the original six in the NHL, right? And then you got the Hershey Bears, and then it's the Fort Wayne Comets, or the next longest running professional hockey organization.
There you go.
For sports fans who are familiar with Doc Emmerich, who of course was the voice of hockey for so many years before he retired recently. Yep. He grew up here in the Fort Wayne area, and the Fort Wayne Comets were what introduced Doc to sports and
very
got
good.
Him started in his career. So
there you go.
Fort Wayne Comets, the more you know.
Yes, absolutely.
Fort Wayne Comets, by the way, last bit of trivia, Comets spelled with a K.
Oh, wow.
Crazy. I don't think I ever figured that out, and it really didn't interest me enough to delve into it further. John, let's talk about the Padres and some of these young players that you've had the privilege of seeing play. Just in general, do you feel like the young Padres, the organization, is as well stocked as most other people seem to think it is?
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, I've actually been out here in Fort Wayne with the Tin Caps since 2013. And so, yeah, between the Comets and their long history of success hockey-wise and the Tin Caps who play at Parkview Field, which a lot of times gets rated as the top ballpark in minor league baseball, it's considered like the number one minor league sports city in the country. And it's been a privilege to see so many top prospects. Admittedly, you know, we had that stretch there where we were seeing all these guys make their major league debuts with other organizations after they had turned into assets in the trade market. So, you know, a stretch like this week here, seeing guys like Jackson Merrill and Graham Pauly, who we had literally last summer. So not only for them to make it here from the high A level to the show is awesome in itself, but the rapid timeline is great too. And I've got no doubt that in due time, there's going to be a bunch more that we saw here in Fort Wayne not long ago, because I think the Padres are first off, you just got to credit the scouting group, especially with the 2022 draft class that they had, even the year before that, which produced Merrill, but a lot of guys who are developing well, and you know, not only the scouting group but the player development staff too, doing their part in grooming these guys to contribute to a club that obviously here has, you know, playoff and beyond expectations.
We're talking to John Nolan here. He's the Fort Wayne Tin Caps play-by-play man on 97.3 The Fan. And so we were texting a little bit earlier about some of the different prospects that you've seen. And like you said, you've seen a lot of them. You've seen Ethan Salas. You've seen Jackson Merrill, Robbie Snelling, Dylan Lesko. But Jackson Merrill's the kind of hot topic here in San Diego right now. And you got to see him up close and personal and kind of out of the spotlight. What kind of player is Jackson Merrill?
Yeah, I think a lot of the scouting reports now are accurate. I mean, the first thing that comes to mind is just his ability to get the bat on the ball. And even I saw someone had shared stats from spring training, and I know it's only spring training, but comparing him to other top-tier prospects around the game from other organizations, he had by far the lowest swing and miss rate of any top prospect in big league spring training. That goes right along with what we saw to him in the minors last year, and especially when you look back actually at the arc of his story in the minors last year, kind of inexplicably, there were two different weeks in the first month or so of the season in which he got a virus. So he was just physically not 100% in the early part last year, not to mention having to play in the cold of the Midwest. So through the first month or so, the numbers were not what we expected. I think actually when you step back at it now, and especially when you consider some of the conversation that people have about having him, you know, in the deep end of the big leagues right now, how will he respond when he faces adversity and, you know, inevitably at some point goes through a slump? You know, there's obviously a difference between going through a slump against major league pitching and going through a slump against minor league pitching. But, you know, he kind of had a bit of that humble pie last year, and a testament to the kind of character that he has, that he overcame that, and he went on to you know, put up those gaudy numbers that you'd expect out of a top prospect in the minors. But I think, again, the thing that really just jumps out is it got to the point that he just was not striking out. And so If he wasn't barreling the ball up early in an AB, there would be situations where, you know, he'd spoil those borderline pitches and, you know, lay off borderline pitches when they were out of the zone. And, you know, it might have taken 11 or 12 pitches, but he'd find a way to get on base. And so really steady, actually. You know, I know Tony is traveling back right now. I think out of any prospect, and I'm not trying to be hyperbolic here, but out of any prospects that that I've seen as far as a left-handed bat going through that old 5.5 hole, I mean, that was Jackson Merrill. He's not a guy who's usually trying to do too much. So he's not – I know he almost hit a home run today, but usually not swinging for the fences per se. He'll just, you know, if the pitch on the outer part of the plate, he's got no problem, you know, adjusting to what he's seeing and just knocking a single through the opposite side. And so I think that, you know, that's gonna benefit him and hopefully prevent an early slump now that he's up in the show.
Yeah, first two hits of his career today for Jackson Merrill, and 2-for-5, and as you said, hitting the ball with authority. John Nolan, seeing all these young Padre players now. Ethan Salas, I mean, he's gotten a lot of attention. He's still like 12 years old. I mean, I know he's a little old. Not much.
He's 17, I think.
I know he's 17, but... I mean, are we seeing things from him that lead us to believe that he is the can't-miss prospect that people say he is?
Yeah, I think with him, it's probably more the intangibles because of the fact that he's been so young, still 17 right now, and you know, last year playing for the most part against guys who are closer to their mid-20s. I know he had a great run at the single-A level down the road in Lake Elsinore in which you know, the numbers did kind of pop out of the box score. But, you know, as a catcher, I think it's more so about just the mental part of the game for him and how advanced he is there. And, you know, every pitcher that I've talked to in the minor league system that's worked with him, you know, they just rave about his ability calling the game and, you know, what he can do defensively as a catcher to make things better for them. And I think he understands the importance and value of cultivating relationships with these guys. And again, that's part of why he had the quick ascension to Double A last year, because that's where a lot of the top pitching prospects who, you know, might get a call up at some point this year, or if not, then perhaps next year. And yeah, just really kind of fostering chemistry with them, and yeah, just carries himself as a complete professional, and part of byproduct of the fact that his own father played minor league baseball, and he's got an older brother in the minors and an uncle, I think a grandfather, and basically everyone in his family has played professional baseball. So he's grown up in that professional setting and environment. And I think a lot of fans know this by now, but just a reminder, even though he technically was considered the top international prospect in baseball last year out of Venezuela, spent a considerable part of his childhood in Florida. So that bilingual piece is another, you know, pretty critical one in helping, you know, the quick progress for him too. And well, we didn't have him for too long in Fort Wayne, so I can't say I got to know him on a personal level exceptionally well. But, you know, in that short time, I learned that even though he's just a 17-year-old, he's kind of an old soul. Like, you know, he's not someone who's got like a flashy sports car these days. I mean, I don't think he even really has dipped into his bonus money yet, but I know he is a fan of classic cars, and he's pretty knowledgeable about cars from decades ago. So it's just little stuff like that, that, you know, makes him different. Again, you know, how many of us as an adult sometimes, struggle even to be on time, let alone early. And he is consistently, you know, the first one in to the ballpark for early practice and like the last one to leave, not in a rush to go do anything else, but just, really focused on, trying to be the best player that he can be.
Talking to John Nolan here, play-by-play man for the Fort Wayne Tin Caps on 97.3, The Fan. We've seen a lot of players, or at least not a lot, but multiple players coming from Double A, skipping Triple A, and going right to the big leagues. And since you're calling Double A, and these guys are going from where you're at to the big leagues, why do you think it's much easier for these guys to skip Triple A?
I don't know if it's necessarily easier for them to skip Triple A, but just the reality of it here in this day and age is that like the geographic environment in not only El Paso, Texas, where the Padres AAA affiliate, the Chihuahuas, is, but also the majority of the teams in that Pacific Coast League play at elevation. And so It goes both ways for pitchers. You know, they can execute pitches and induce what should be a routine fly ball, and then all of a sudden, thanks to the elements, it becomes a home run. And so, you know, not that there haven't been any guys who have pitched their way through the Pacific Coast League, but, you know, for some guys, it can really throw them off. You know, the numbers that are not representative. I think, you know, last year, Pedro Avila was an example of that, right? Like, he did not have good numbers necessarily in AAA, and, you know, he held his own during his stints pitching in big league action. And then, you know, on the opposite side of things, maybe hitters can develop some bad habits because, yeah, they don't even have to have their A swing to get a ball in the air. And next thing you know, you know, that elevation is turning it into a home run. And especially, you know, when you lock in here on what Mike Schilt and the Padres are trying to do and, you know, be a team that executes situationally, you're not seeing a lot of those types of games in the PCL where more often than not it can turn into something of a home run derby. So I think for that reason, that's, you know, that's definitely an aspect of why some guys are skipping AAA. It's not because you know, there's no value at all to playing at that level, but you know, some of the things there, because the elements make it skewed. And then also, I think when you step back and you look at sort of the roster makeup of AAA teams, that's a lot of what I suppose we would consider the 4A players, right? Mm-hmm. Guys who've kind of been back and forth in the big leagues and are more veteran. And obviously, it's really important to have guys like, I figure this year, a Matthew Batten will be starting off there, a Kevin Plawecki, guys who have proven that they can contribute at the big league level. But, you know, you're talking about sort of the core of the prospects, younger guys, in a way.
Cronenworth coming. That's lined sharply down the right field side. A fair ball going to go all the way to the corner and going to give the Padres a lead. Bogarts has scored. Tatis is on his way. He will score. And Cronenworth, who tripled seven times last year, is into third base with a two-run three-bagger.
Take that, all you Jake haters. Jake Cronenworth, 4-for-4, 4 RBIs today, leading the Padres to their highest scoring output ever in a game against the Dodgers. That's pretty crazy.
That is.
Been playing the Dodgers since 1969, Scraby. 55 years of baseball. And today, the first time they ever scored 15 against the men in blue. They gave up 11, but Robert Suarez doing the un-Josh Hader-like thing of recording a four-out save, nailed it down. Padres win 15-11. Michael King got the win in relief of Joe Musgrove. Joe did not have a great day, but he had a lot of support. Padres got 5 in the first, 4 in the third, had a 9-2 lead. But the game was not iced until Manny Machado, using the words of my friend Tony Gwynn Jr., pummeled a 3-run homer in the top of the ninth inning to account for the final margin. Yoshi Yamamoto's major league debut did not go well. Did not go well.
So I don't know. I shouldn't hate the guys. I don't hate the guy.
You don't hate him. You hate that he signed, you know, he was able to sign that big of a contract without ever playing a game. That's what you hate.
Or throwing a pitch.
A pitch, yeah. John Nolan, Fort Wayne, Tin Cat, Kip Caps, those guys, our play-by-play voice joining us shortly. Two games in the NCAA tournament are in progress. Oregon, early second half, running away right now from South Carolina, 57-40. The Quacks lead by 17.
The Quacks? Are they like doctors or something?
No, it's another term for ducks. It's a term of endearment.
Okay.
The Quacks lead 57-40. Also, Mountain West, Nevada Wolfpack closed the first half on a 16-0 run. The Nevada was down by 7, but now at halftime, Nevada leads Dayton by 9, 34-25. Those are the two games that are in progress right now. How's your bracket? We'll keep you up to date as these games roll along. John Nolan, about set to join us. Okay, yeah, no. Is he ready? Scraby is negotiating with him right now.
I'm not negotiating. No, I was just telling him. I was putting him on hold. He's ready to go.
Hello, John Nolan. How are you? And how are things in Fort Wayne, Indiana these days?
Hey, Chris. Hey, Matt. Thanks a lot for the chance to connect with you. And if only I had someone to negotiate on my behalf, maybe I'd be joining you guys in the sun rather than chilly weather. We're in the 30s here in Indiana, but ready or not, we'll be playing ball soon.
Yeah. Now, I have spent some time in Fort Wayne, Indiana. I broadcast Gulls hockey here in San Diego many years ago. And there was a year where the Gulls played the Fort Wayne Comets for the IHL championship. Fort Wayne won it in four straight. So the Comets celebrated at our expense. But I did spend a week there, and it was nice. I had a good time.
Yeah, I know the immortal Dave Marcus has shared that trip with me in the past. And yeah, for listeners right now, in case you need some useless information, here in the United States, you have the original six in the NHL, right? And then you got the Hershey Bears, and then it's the Fort Wayne Comets, or the next longest running professional hockey organization.
There you go.
For sports fans who are familiar with Doc Emmerich, who of course was the voice of hockey for so many years before he retired recently. Yep. He grew up here in the Fort Wayne area, and the Fort Wayne Comets were what introduced Doc to sports and got him started in his career. So
there you go.
Fort Wayne Comets, the more you know.
Fort Wayne Comets, by the way, last bit of trivia, Comets spelled with a K.
Oh, wow.
Crazy.
I don't think I ever figured that out, and it really didn't interest me enough to delve into it further. John, let's talk about the Padres and some of these young players that you've had the privilege of seeing play. Just in general, do you feel like the young Padres, the organization, is as well stocked as most other people seem to think it is?
Yeah, for sure. And I've actually been out here in Fort Wayne with the Tin Caps since 2013, and so between the Comets and their long history of success hockey wise and the Tin Caps, who play at Parkview Field, which a lot of times gets rated as the top ballpark in minor league baseball. It's considered like the number one minor league sports city in the country. And it's been a privilege to see so many top prospects. Admittedly, we had that stretch there where we were seeing all these guys make their major league debuts with other organizations after they had turned into assets in the trade market. So, a stretch like this week here, seeing guys like Jackson Merrill and Graham Pauly, who we had literally last summer. So not only for them to make it here from the high A level to the show is awesome in itself, but the rapid timeline is great too. And I've got no doubt that in due time, there's going to be a bunch more that we saw here in Fort Wayne not long ago, because I think that the Padres are first off, you just got to credit the scouting group, especially with the 2022 draft class that they had, even the year before that, which produced Merrill, but a lot of guys who are developing well, and not only the scouting group but the player development staff too, doing their part in grooming these guys to contribute to a club that obviously here has playoff and beyond expectations.
We're talking to John Nolan here. He's the Fort Wayne Tin Caps play-by-play man on 97.3 The Fan. And so we were texting a little bit earlier about some of the different prospects that you've seen. And like you said, you've seen a lot of them. You've seen Ethan Salas. You've seen Jackson Merrill, Robbie Snelling, Dylan Lesko. But Jackson Merrill's the kind of hot topic here in San Diego right now. And you got to see him up close and personal and kind of out of the spotlight. What kind of player is Jackson Merrill?
Yeah, I think a lot of the scouting reports now are accurate. I mean, the first thing that comes to mind is just his ability to get the bat on the ball. And even I saw someone had shared stats from spring training, and I know it's only spring training, but comparing him to other top-tier prospects around the game from other organizations, he had by far the lowest swing and miss rate of any top prospect in big league spring training. That goes right along with what we saw to him in the minors last year, and especially when you look back actually at the arc of his story in the minors last year, kind of inexplicably, there were two different weeks in the first month or so of the season in which he got a virus. So he was just physically not 100% in the early part last year, not to mention having to play in the cold of the Midwest. So through the first month or so, the numbers were not what we expected. I think actually when you step back at it now, and especially when you consider some of the conversation that people have about having him, you know, in the deep end of the big leagues right now, how will he respond when he faces adversity and, you know, inevitably at some point goes through a slump? You know, there's obviously a difference between going through a slump against major league pitching and going through a slump against minor league pitching. But, you know, he kind of had a bit of that humble pie last year, and a testament to the kind of character that he has, that he overcame that and he went on to you know, put up those gaudy numbers that you'd expect out of a top prospect in the minors. But I think, again, the thing that really just jumps out is it got to the point that he just was not striking out. And so if he wasn't barreling the ball up early in an AB, there would be situations where, you know, he'd spoil those borderline pitches and, you know, lay off borderline pitches when they were out of the zone. And, you know, it might have taken 11 or 12 pitches, but he'd find a way to get on base. And so really steady, actually. You know, I know Tony is traveling back right now. I think out of any prospect, and I'm not trying to be hyperbolic here, but out of any prospects that that I've seen as far as a left-handed bat going through that old 5.5 hole, I mean, that was Jackson Merrill. He's not a guy who's usually trying to do too much. So he's not – I know he almost hit a home run today, but usually not swinging for the fences per se. He'll just, you know, if the pitch on the outer part of the plate, he's got no problem you know, adjusting to what he's seeing and just knocking a single through the opposite side. And so I think that, you know, that's gonna benefit him and hopefully prevent an early slump now that he's up in the show.
Yeah, first two hits of his career today for Jackson Merrill, and 2-for-5. And as you said, hitting the ball with authority. John Nolan, seeing all these young Padre players now. Ethan Salas, I mean, he's gotten a lot of attention. He's still like 12 years old. I mean, I know he's a little old. Not much.
He's 17, I think.
I know he's 17, but I mean, are we seeing things from him that lead us to believe that he is the can't-miss prospect that people say he is?
Yeah, I think with him, it's probably more the intangibles because of the fact that he's been so young, still 17 right now, and, you know, last year playing for the most part against guys who are closer to their mid-20s. I know he had a great run at the single-A level down the road in Lake Elsinore in which, you know, the numbers did kind of pop out of the box score. But, you know, as a catcher, I think it's more so about just the mental part of the game for him and how advanced he is there. And, you know, every pitcher that I've talked to in the minor league system that's worked with him, you know, they just rave about his ability calling the game and, you know, what he can do defensively as a catcher to make things better for them. And I think he understands the importance and value of cultivating relationships, with these guys. And again, that's part of why he had the quick ascension to Double A last year, because that's where a lot of the top pitching prospects who, you know, might get a call up at some point this year, or if not, then perhaps next year. And yeah, just really kind of fostering chemistry with them, and yeah, just carries himself as a complete professional, and part of byproduct of the fact that his own father played minor league baseball, and he's got an older brother in the minors and an uncle, I think a grandfather, and basically everyone in his family's played professional baseball. So he's grown up in that professional setting and environment. And I think a lot of fans know this by now, but just a reminder, even though he technically was considered the top international prospect in baseball last year out of Venezuela, spent a considerable part of his childhood in Florida. So that bilingual piece is another, you know, pretty critical one in helping you know, the quick progress for him too. And well, we didn't have him for too long in Fort Wayne, so I can't say I got to know him on a personal level exceptionally well, but you know, in that short time I learned that even though he's just a 17-year-old, he's kind of an old soul. Like, you know, he's not someone who's got like a flashy sports car these days. I mean, I don't think he even really has dipped into his bonus money yet, but I know he is a fan of classic cars, and he's pretty knowledgeable about cars from decades ago. So just little stuff like that, you know, makes him different. Again, you know, how many of us as an adult sometimes struggle even to be on time, let alone early. And he is consistently, you know, the first one in to the ballpark for early practice, and like the last one to leave, not in a rush to go do anything else. But just really focused on trying to be the best player that he can be.
Talking to John Nolan here, play-by-play man for the Fort Wayne Tin Caps on 97.3 The Fan. We've seen a lot of players, or at least not a lot, but multiple players coming from AA, skipping AAA, and going right to the big leagues. And since you're calling AA, and these guys are going from where you're at to the big leagues, why do you think it's much easier for these guys to skip AAA?
I don't know if it's necessarily easier for them to skip AAA, but just the reality of it here in this day and age is that like the geographic environment in not only El Paso, Texas, where the Padres AAA affiliate, the Chihuahuas, is, but also the majority of the teams in that Pacific Coast League play at elevation. And so it goes both ways for pitchers. You know, they can execute pitches and induce what should be a routine fly ball, and then all of a sudden, thanks to the elements, it becomes a home run. And so, you know, not that there haven't been any guys who have pitched their way through the Pacific Coast League, but, you know, for some guys, it can really throw them off. You know, the numbers that are not representative. I think, you know, last year, Pedro Avila was an example of that, right? Like, he did not have good numbers necessarily in AAA, and, you know, he held his own during his stints pitching in big league action. And then, you know, on the opposite side of things, maybe hitters can develop some bad habits because, yeah, they don't even have to have their A swing to get a ball in the air. And next thing you know, that elevation is turning it into a home run. And especially, you know, when you lock in here on what Mike Schilt and the Padres are trying to do and, you know, be a team that executes situationally, you're not seeing a lot of those types of games in the PCL, where more often than not it can turn into something of a home run derby. So I think for that reason, that's, you know, that's definitely an aspect of why some guys are skipping AAA. It's not because you know, there's no value at all to playing at that level, but you know, some of the things there, because of the elements, make it skewed. And then also, I think when you step back and you look at sort of the roster makeup of AAA teams, that's a lot of what I suppose we would consider the 4A players, right? Mm-hmm. Guys who've kind of been back and forth in the big leagues and are more veteran. And obviously, it's really important to have guys like, I figure this year, a Matthew Batten will be starting off there, a Kevin Plawecki, guys who have proven that they can contribute at the big league level. But, you know, you're talking about sort of the core of the prospects, younger guys. In a way, it's a little bit better maybe to keep them together, you know, at the AA stage.
We've got about a minute left, but I want to spend it on Graham Pauly, because I don't think a lot of people really know a lot about him. He hit 16 home runs for Fort Wayne last year. He's on this big league roster. He's kind of going to be coming off the bench, at least for now, pinch hitting. But what can he do, and what should we look for?
Yeah, so Graham Pauly, first thing that just really stands out to me about him is the type of person that he is. I remember meeting him when he first arrived in Fort Wayne last year, and just like a really unassuming guy, but really polite, really respectful. So whether he's talking to a former major leaguer, maybe on the coaching staff in the clubhouse, or he's talking to a fan, he's like the exact same guy. And I had the chance to be out at Peoria in spring training last week before the big league team left, and talking with Graham, he was 100% the same exact, just extremely polite, professional, respectful person. So I think it says a lot, because the time in between, he was the Padres minor league player of the year, but, you know, no ego whatsoever from that. The guy has proven that he can hit. He made a modification to his swing midway through last year that caused him to launch the ball more. So after being a really steady singles hitter for anyone who saw him in Lake Elsinore last year, and maybe a guy who's driving the ball to the gaps for some doubles, but all of a sudden last year unlocked the ability to get the ball over the wall. I'll also say, I know Keith Law for The Athletic, he had a pretty harsh review of Graham's defense. I thought that was totally out of line. Not saying that Graham is going to be confused with Manny playing at third base, but I think you're talking about an above average athlete. So he's played all around the infield, even a little bit in the outfield. I trust in both like his IQ. I mean, he's got a degree from Duke in their economics program. I think between his IQ and his athleticism, he can more than hold his own in the field, too.
Well, John, you can certainly hold more than your own.
Yeah,
talking about these young Padre players, I know that our fans enjoyed hearing about it. And as we go along, I want to definitely catch up with you and track the progress of these younger players who eventually we'll see here in San Diego. Thanks for your time today. Enjoy the season. Best of luck to the Tin Caps.
Yeah, for sure. Appreciate you guys and your coverage of the entire Padre system. And for me in the Eastern time zone, thanks to everyone on staff for you guys who help me out with my insomnia when it's late night or done with the minor league games. And I'm just locked into the station here streaming online. So keep up the great work. And yeah, hope to be able to share more stories about guys making the quick rise through the minor league system here soon.
We'll be ready. Thanks, John. We'll talk to you again. John Nolan right there, the play-by-play voice of the Fort Wayne Tin Caps, giving us a little more knowledge on the likes of Graham Pauly and Jackson Merrill and Ethan Salas and some of the young stars for this Padre ball club. Padres over the Dodgers today, if you just tuned in, 15-11. Yeah, that was the final score. The most runs the Padres have ever scored in a game against the Dodgers. And they've evened things up 1-1 as Tony Gwynn Jr. and everybody else flies back from Korea. We have already flown through the first hour of this program. And we'll come right back. Daily Gambit is next. And we'll update you on the ongoing. There's two games in the NCAA tournament right now. We'll give you scores when we come back. Stick around. More Gwynn and Chris ahead.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.